Welcome back, WNST, Tass in Baltimore and Baltimore Positive. I'm pulling out all my bag of tricks here, my wise conversations, all of our intelligent conversations brought to you by friends at Wise Markets. Did a little pause for pets last week. I got Nala up onto my lap for about 20 seconds, onto the camera, and then she jumped off. But it's all cool. She's watching the sunrise every day. My condo's for sale. I think Mickey Coachella loves Baltimore enough to own my condo before it's all over with. We go east side here. You know, I text Mickey last week, and I'm like, Mick, Preakness is next week. This is before Baffert's horse or any of that stuff. And when I have pictures of you on a stage there, well, there were girls and there were shirts and there was water and there were horses, allegedly. I don't know. You saw any. Yeah, I did things in the Preakness. I will admit to you, the last time you admitted to me, you've said some things maybe on a microphone that maybe you couldn't say now, whatever. I did things for sure.
Yeah.
In the 1980s, in the infield, on Preakness Saturday, that I don't want to say would get me arrested because it wasn't anything like that. And I don't even want to say I'm ashamed of what I did because I done it. and I enjoyed it. Sometimes the hangover the next day, and when my girlfriend on Kane Street had to unglue me from the tub and I looked like a beet. You know, I mean, that was Sunday silence. I had a real Sunday silence that year. The horse won on Saturday, and Sunday I was silenced. I should warm up for you this week.
Anytime you're ready, buddy. You know, Preakness is amazing for me because when I was a little kid, I don't know if you know this, Nestor, my grandfather was a trainer and breeder. For real, I lived.
My grandfather blew the bugle at the track in the 58, 59, and 60 Preakness. My grandfather played the trumpet. That's what he did.
That's
my grandfather.
So my grandfather, he never had a horse run in the Preakness. I think he had one run on Preakness Day. He had a very successful horse back in the 70s named Satan Squall. But here's an interesting fact. Do you remember the jockey Chris McCarron?
I texted him this week to try to get him on the show.
Ask him, I believe his very first win ever as an apprentice jockey was on my grandfather's horse, Satan Squall. And I don't know whatever happened to the picture, but it was, I had a picture.
Oh, you would text McCarron right now. I'm going to text him right now. Did you ride Satan's Squall? Is that the question?
Was that his first win? And he was an apprentice, I believe, at the time.
I'm going to text him right now. Did you ride Satan's Squall for your grandfather's name was what?
Freddie Coachella.
Coachella. I didn't know how to spell Coachella. It's two C's in Coachella. I'm going to ask. Maybe we'll get an answer in the next phase. That's the beauty of text. I can just throw a text. I might get an answer for you before the segment's over.
That's beautiful.
Mickey, how the hell are you? You healthy? You happy? You sober?
Yeah,
you're life? You're doing comedy? You're in Eastport. You're in my old neighborhood. Chevrolet over there, you know?
Yeah, we talked about this at great length last time, Nestor. I'm doing great, man. I love this week. I really love Preakness Week. Besides bringing back memories of my grandfather and me as a kid, you know, funny story about my grandfather. He used to go to the track really early, every day.
And now, was the track Pimlico? Was that the track?
It was either Pimlico or Timonium back then.
Well, I was going to say, you were a kid, if you were doing that and going, you probably went to all of these places at one point, or probably got in the car and went down to Bowie or whatever, right?
But the funniest thing is my very first week of kindergarten, so I'm like 5 or 6. He was supposed to drop me off in the morning at school on his way to the track. All 5 days that week, I just went straight to the track with him. He never bothered dropping me off. And on Friday.
No wonder you turned out the way you did.
Listen, dude, my mother gets a call Friday. Now, this is my dad's father, but we all live together. And my mom gets a call Friday from the school asking if I'm okay.
How's Mick?
My mother's like, what are you talking about? And they're like, we haven't seen your son at school. So we come home that day from the track, and my mother is ready to kill him, man. She is ready to kill him. And that was, but he was always like, it's kindergarten. What are you going to learn what bread is? Blue, you don't need that crap. It's a glorified babysitter. That was his excuse, man.
Man, it sounds like a book. 5 days at the track with my grandfather in kindergarten, right? The things I learned there that I didn't have to finger paint. I mean, man. You know.
It was awesome, though, because, you know, being that age, Nestor, around the track and your grandfather being, you know, one of the guys inside of it, you know, you got treated like a little prince. I mean, I could walk in the jockey room. I can walk on the paddock. I could go anywhere I wanted. Nobody questioned a six-year-old kid back then.
Can't imagine, you know, what a pain in the ass. I mean, I know, and I've told people around me, like people knew me. I had Brian Eater on this week from the Chaucer here. I got my cup here. I want to promote Brian's place because we're doing crab cakes. We're working together, and he's up. He's in Highland Town right now. They go Upper Canton, right? I said, man, don't dog Highland Town me, man. Highland Town was like where it all happened and, you know, getting together. But, just the old memories of the track and what it meant in the city. And my father was not a gambler. So I didn't go to the track. I told the story this week of the first time Mike Gathigan was on. And I told him the first time I went to the track, I saw Howard Cosell. It was Preakness Day, 1985. Wow. I was 17 years old. I mean, I was completely starstruck. But when I'm back on the back end of the track at any point over there and seeing the horses and the power and the beauty of all, my wife loved going to the Alibi Breakfast, seeing the Clydesdales, all of that. She rode horses when she was a girl. I mean,
right.
I had my English Springer Spaniel. I played sports when I was a kid. But the track for Baltimore, and everybody has a story. That's the thing about it. Like, everybody our age is connected to somebody that had something to do with the track.
Well, interestingly enough, I mean, I have pretty neat couple stories about Pimlico, especially because forget the childhood. I was about 20 or 21. I was playing in a band called Lost Angels. And we were the last band to play Preakness infield for that huge gap they had without bands.
So you're saying the band was like when the running of the urine, when it was crazy.
Well, they didn't even, during the running of the urinal things or whatever they were, the porta potties, that was, I believe, years after when we did the bikini contests at infield, because they went from doing bands, which I think was like 91, 93, somewhere in there, was the last time they had local bands. And we played and it just went crazy. I mean, I think it was an AC/DC song or something we played, and the infield just erupted into like all this energy. Beer cans were flying. I mean, it was totally insane. And the next year, 98 Rock was like, they're not going to let us have bands anymore. And so that was like a long stretch. Then they went back and they started doing the bikini contests and the, you know, all that stuff instead of the music. They thought the music got everybody too pumped. And then when the family decided they were going to do huge concerts in conjunction, then it came back. But there was a good, I want to say 10, 12 year stretch where I don't think they had bands in the infield.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a rough thing, dude, because like before I had ever gone out there, right, I heard the legend and I saw them building the scaffolding. Yeah. And Phil Jackman would tell me stories when I was a kid about the stuff he'd seen at the infield, the urban legend or whatever. The late 80s is when I went out there. So I worked at the paper. I'm going to tell all the stories I shouldn't tell in this segment, right?
Yeah.
So back in the 80s, I worked at the paper and I had a press credential and I could get into the track early. So what we would do, this is true story. Before I ran buses, before there were girls and beer sponsors and Bob Leffler, and we had our own bathroom. This is in 1987, 8, 9, in that range. I would get out there in the morning early. Because they would open the track at 7 in the morning. Remember, the buses would all come and people would be inside the track. Gates open at 7 a.m., right? Well, I would get out there at 7 a.m. and I would cordon off. I would cordon off our area.
Right.
And my friends would all come out. And my buddy's brother, who's deceased, great Frankie DeBilius, worked at KSC, but then he worked at Popeyes. And what we would do is we would get 100 pieces, 200 pieces of fried chicken. We freeze it and then we bring it out during the day and we just sort of thaw out because it's usually warm, you know, and we would just have food. We would bring I would bring the beer out and, you know, get it out there, get it iced down. And then at the end of the day, I don't remember the end of most days. Like, I literally in that era, but then we got into the 90s and I had the station before I had the station, when I was just like Sports Forum in the mid 90s, I did business with Bob Leffler in the track where we would do 100 tickets, 2 busloads. We left from Paring Parkway or from Dundalk. One time he left from Costas. I remember. Right. I mean, all sorts of years. I mean, I did that for a dozen years. And there was a caged-in area between the village but way away from you because they were always afraid of pissing 98 Rock off because that Nestor guy has such a following, he's going to put 98 Rock out of business. So anyway, so they gave me a caged-in area and I had my own bathroom and then I would bring the van out. Yeah. So this is what we did. We took the Get Nasty van. You remember the Get Nasty van?
Yeah, of course.
I would put all the beer in it, and it was always Budweiser sponsor, right? So I would always put the beer in there. We would drive the van in Friday night.
Right.
6 o'clock. They had like a time where you could drive every from like 6 till 10 p.m. You drive everything in. If you're not in by 10 p.m., you're not getting in. At 5 a.m., you have to be back in the track in the morning because at 7, we're letting the – frat boys from Lehigh in because that's pretty much what it was.
Interrupt you for 1 second and tell you something. So I'll never forget one of my favorite things I've ever said, like just funniest things, is I'm doing the morning show on 98 Rock and it's or maybe the afternoon, I don't remember, but I'm at the track. No, it was Kirk Martin Lopez still. In fact, I was just a guest. They had me there really early. And I coined a term that I just thought was the funniest thing. I got there at 6 o'clock. We go on the air. The gates opened at 7 or 8. I think it was 7. And I go, and Lopez, rest his soul, is talking. And I go, oh, Lopez, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but we're about to commence with the running of the fools. And it was, you know, you remember the tunnel underneath.
Well, people would run to get their land. It was like the Wild West.
Nestor, that tunnel underneath the last stretch turn where people get into the infield, I remember standing there with a microphone, a wireless mic and a head gear on, and the gates.
Is it kind of like Kmart at 6 a.m. on Black Friday?
It blows it away. I mean, because here was the crazy part. There were girls like just in bikini tops and they're running. Their tops are flying off. They're running so fast. They're trying to carry a cooler. Their boyfriend's behind them, falling down. He's already
drunk.
Yeah. And then you'd like see some of these people. And by noon or one, you'd see them just totally passed out somewhere.
There are pictures of me in such condition.
Dude, it's you know what's crazy? All these years, I don't know if you know this, I'm really not a drinker.
About you. I do.
Yeah. I'm not either.
You know, I mean, everybody was when they were 21, I guess, right?
But. Yeah, I've never really been a drinker. I've probably had less than 150 beers my whole life. And it's never been that thing for me. But watching these morons, the running of the fools. And it's funny, too, because you would see people you knew. And you were like, I know that guy. He works at such and such. He's a great dude. He fixed my car. And by 2 in the afternoon, you're feeling bad because the guy is just laid out, half naked.
And there's nothing you could do except cover him up. Just make sure to get a sunburn.
Try to put something around him so nobody trips over him. I mean, it was brutal.
I've seen people out there buried in beer cans. I mean, just like, it was like the Hindenburg. The humanity. Yeah.
That's exactly what it was like. And, you know, I can remember being a kid, probably 13 or 14, and my uncles, some of my uncles are only, one's 4, the other 6, the other 7 years older than me, or maybe 8 years, they would go to the infield, you know, when they were teenagers, early 20s, and they'd come back all sunburned, messed up, and just completely hilarious, and talking about these things, and I'm like, there's no way that stuff happens. And then I went, man, and I'm like, oh my God.
Mickey, I'm not going to lie to you. Okay, so because we're sharing my sins with Mickey formerly 98 Rock, I went, you know, I'm getting rid of stuff, right? We went through this. I got rid of a whole bunch of rock and roll stuff, sports. Yeah. I'm just getting rid of stuff because I have too much stuff. My condo's for sale, and we're trying to downsize. I'm 52. My wife's almost died twice. We've lived here 18 years. I need a porch. I need a garden. I'm going to learn how to work a grill. I had Tim on, Dundalk guy. Well, actually, Patapsco guy from Wise Markets talking about grilling this summer. And I haven't had a grill in 20 years. So like next summer, the goal is to have a grill, right?
Right.
So, you know, we're going through all this, this stuff. Let me get my Chaucer cup out here.
Yeah, go ahead, buddy. By the way, I got to tell you, Nestor, out of all the guys I've ever known in my life, you are the greatest promoter for whoever supports you I have ever seen in my life. If somebody is supporting you, you will go to the ends of the earth for them. I just admire
you. I'm going to write that down and put that in my testimonial package. Said Mickey Coachella, yes. A competitor who tried to put me out of business every day with a guy named Ed Kiernan who hated me and a guy named Jeff Beauchamp who shat upon me in the Baltimore Sun, and it still gets me up in the morning. So anyway, I'm cleaning my stuff out, Mick, and I've got all these pictures, right? My wife has pictures of her childhood. I have... You know, the thing my mother gave me of all my childhoods that I've been digitizing and whatever. Sure. And I find, I was a music critic in the 80s, but before that, I was the guy sleeping out for concerts, getting front row tickets, sneaking my Pentax camera in, taking pictures of Van Halen on the Diver Down tour. So I have Journey on the Frontiers tour. I have all of these pictures, Styx on the Kill Rovers tour, 82, 3, 4 in that era. Yeah. Def Leppard on Pyromania. I have incredible pictures of all those shows. Aerosmith, when they were all gacked up.
Yeah.
So, find those pictures, but then next to that, I got the station in 98. So 98, 99, 2000, 2001, 2002, I was single. I got married in 03. So in that era, we were doing these bus trips that I speak of with the Cages, the Get Nasty shirts with the Black Eyed Susans. I should find some of that stuff this week. I don't have my press passes, but I found Photomat, Kmart pictures, stacks of them in the actual, it was an envelope, and then there was the envelope inside the envelope.
Right.
And I opened them up. Some are rock pictures. Some are like my prom pictures from 1985. And then I found like six stacks. I'm not kidding you. It was six, 450 pictures, right? Like this many of nothing but pictures that a fan of mine literally took of girls' breasts, had them all. Mickey, I can hold them up for you right now. Girls with cigarettes out on guys' shoulders. Like, dude,
it's unreal.
I have them, and I'm like, I feel dirty. What do I do with them? I mean, these are people's mothers, grandmothers. Like, I'm ashamed of having them. I mean, it was like, but I
forget the year.
If you want them, I kept them for you.
I forget the year. It was in the 90s. Mid-90s, not 4, 5, 6, somewhere in there, I went to the Derby. I went to the Kentucky Derby and went into the infield. And I remember in Kentucky being there and being like, this sucks. Like, there's like, it was, everybody was so beautiful and well-behaved. And it was like this.
It was a picnic.
It was like a picnic, but all these wonderful, all these people.
Kids
like really,
and stuff. Families stuff.
There was a family event. Everybody's into the horses. And I remember meeting
people
a guy.
People reading the form.
Right. I remember meeting a guy that day who lived like 9 blocks from the track. And I said to him, we started talking. He's like, where are you from? I said, I'm actually from Baltimore, man. We have the Preakness. And his eyes get this big, Nestor, bigger than his head. And he's like, man, what's your infield like? I've only heard about it. And I was like, buddy, it's like nothing like this, man. I go, half the people there have no idea horses are running. Like none. Like just unbelievable. I dated a girl, Nestor. That's the funniest thing I can honestly tell you that I ever witnessed at Preakness. I was dating this girl and a bunch of her high school friends showed up. They were a little bit younger than me. Not crazy, like 5 years or whatever. And, but they were just, I think they were still in like their last year of college. And, I get them into all the secure areas, inside the gates, they're all safe. And the one girl says, I want to go out there and walk around with everybody. And I'm like, you can go. I don't care. I'm not going in that craziness. I've been in it 100 times. She goes, the girl I was dating stays with me. I swear to you, not 6 minutes later, they're at the gate, like pounding, like, let us back in. That was actually the year of the running of the urinals. Thing. Were you there for that?
Mickey, I've been there for a lot of things, I'm not being an idiot or even trying to be funny, but like, I've gone to the Preakness in every state of a suit and a tie for years and years, even when I would be out on the infield, I would at 4 o'clock come in and go up top and watch the race. I mean, I've watched a couple of races from the roof that I was the only one up there that wasn't in a suit and tie. You know, I would show up there in the mid 90s as Nasty Nestor in a Get Nasty shirt, soaking wet, having been out in the infield since 5 a.m. and watch the race. So they all really run together for me in some ways. But the running of the urinals thing was specific to mud. And there were 3 or 4 different mud occasions out there where I saw people mud rolling, you know, literally. So
where those urinals were, this was crazy. If you remember where they used to set the center stage up in the infield, it was directly behind it where the compound fence was, where 98 Rock was. And so it was literally the fence, then was that walkway, then the urinals. And this guy got up and ran across them, and everybody cheered. Another guy got up, ran across them, people cheered. Another guy got up, somebody threw a beer can at him, and it like hit him in the shoulder. Well, dude, then the next guy that got up, I mean, I thought he was dead. He must have got hit with 40 beer cans and just fell down, rolled off the urinal. I remember EMTs rushing out of the compound, and it was like watching. And then all these guys just start running everywhere across them. And it was like every beer can that was on the infield at one point was in the air. And it was actually scary.
I mean, I saw a lot of like Buffalo Bills tailgate, you know, WWE, you know, backyard wrestling for those idiots was, you know, remember that turn of the century? That was like a videotaping backyard wrestling. Like, I've seen everything out there. Mickey Kinchella is here. We're telling old Preakness stories we probably shouldn't tell, you know, and I guess the doping part of it and the Baffert part of it and the race part, I'll talk that all week. I got Donna Brothers on. I've got Randy Moss on. Sure, Dick Girardi and I had a great conversation. So I'm doing racing, but from a Baltimore perspective of what the race means here, all kidding aside, naked boobs, nasty man, 98 Rock, all of that, it's going to be something else. It's never going to be that again, right? Like you and I talk about that wistfully. We laugh and I mean, and cry a little bit about that. The guy that punched the horse, I was there for that. I was out. I was up top when that happened, dude.
I was on the rail in the infield. Yeah, because I really am a horse guy. I mean, I grew up, I love it. I love horse races. And I remember, I've always gone to the rail at the finish line to watch the main race, you know, and, you know, over the years, having such great press credentials and security.
So you don't really see the race. You see the finish, but then you can watch the race later. So
I kind of turn around. I can see the race on the big screen enough. But then when they hit that home turn, I'm just like enthralled. And I remember looking down and I see this idiot and I'm like, what the is this guy doing? And I thought he was killed. I really thought he was going to die.
I thought he was going to die.
Yeah, I really did. I mean, and then when that idiot stood up, I was just like, I remember people being like, and then my first thought was honestly, you know, as a humanitarian, you're like, what an idiot, but I hope he's okay. And then I was really worried about the horse, you know, because the last thing you want to see is $1 million thoroughbred have to get put down because some idiot caused it to either, you know, break a leg or something.
Or break 4 horses behind it and jockeys. Exactly. And
I mean, so I remember thinking, I hope they drag this guy through that tunnel by a horse. Like, I was so angry. But then watching it on the news later and finding out everything about that guy, but that's a memory I'll never, ever, ever forget.
Well, you know, being Smaltimore, and this is my 30th year on the radio, so I was on the radio the Monday morning after that, or Monday afternoon after that.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how many people called me and told me they knew him. You know, I mean, that was the other part of it.
He was a Bel Air guy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember being on the radio that Monday, and I bet you for an hour straight, because I think Josh mentioned it in the news, and then we just talked about it till the next. It was unbelievable.
No, it's never happened. We're still talking about it all 25 years later because it was crazy. Yeah. Mickey Coachella joining us here. Tell me what you're doing over in East Point right now, because one night I'm doing this bucket list thing with the 30 crab cakes in 30 days. Yeah, and I'm doing stuff I've never done. Like, I've never fly fished. I'm trying to drag Dan Rodericks out to do that with me because we've been talking about it for 30 years. I'm going to go out on a boat on Tillman Island. I'm trying to drag Jay Schwartz and some people out with me to do that.
Here's a question. Have you ever golfed?
I've golfed many times, enough to know I don't like it.
You don't like it?
You want to putt-putt with you? I'll putt-putt with you in Ocean City now.
We can do that.
No, see, I've done that. See, this is the point of the – for that month of August, I want to eat nothing but Maryland crab just for, you know, for
sure.
And see the state and literally not get thrashers on the boardwalk.
No, I got you. I've
already done that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm trying to do things. I've never gone fishing in Ocean City. I've never been the White Marlin Open starts that week. I've never gone. I used to catch crabs at Bear Creek and whatnot, you know?
Wait. You have never stood on the beach in Ocean City with a surf rod in your hand after.
No, I would do that nasty is what I would do that.
Oh my God, dude. You got to do it with the condos behind you, all the little kids running around late on the beach. You hook something, you get a crowd around you because they have no idea what you're bringing in. You got to do that, Nestor. It's one of my favorite. I'll tell you, my two sons, it's an awesome and heartbreaking story. One was 4, the other was 6. And it was my first time I was going to let them fish with me in the evening. So we went up.
But you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're
so we went up.
Okay.
Yeah. So we went up to the condo. We're staying beachfront, not to try to sound like a big guy. We're beachfront. We go up, we eat, we get done, we come down, I bring all the rods. I'm so excited.
If you're gonna tell me a story, where are you? Which street are you on?
I 54th. 54th.
Okay, all right, I know where you are. Go ahead. Right.
Yep. And
close enough to go to Secrets after the kids go to bed.
Yeah, exactly. So I get out there, I set everything up, and they're so excited. So you know, I still have to cast the rods out for them. They're not big enough to do that. And then I'm like, I got them in the holders. And I'm like, guys, just keep your fingers on the string. Nestor, on the line. And when that comes through, you know, when you feel like a big thing, you yell and you hold that rod, we'll get it in. My son had my little one has a line in the water, 45 seconds, catches a sand shark. About 2 foot long, 18 inches, 2 foot long. Literally, we get it in. Nestor, I have tears coming down my face. I'm so happy that my son, I've dreamt about this my whole life. My son catches a shark. I get it off for him. He's holding it. We're taking pictures. We get it back in. I never kill anything. We get it back in the water. He looks at me and he goes, can I go back to the house now?
I'm done,
man. And then my older son, he stays with me for about an hour. He catches, I forget what he caught.
Dad, this is boring.
Dude, an hour in, my whole life.
I want to play putt-putt, Dad. I want to ride the bumper cars.
Can we go to the boardwalk and you spend another $500 today?
Yeah, I need pizza. Let's go play some games. Yeah. Let's go to the arcade.
But you know what? I do have that moment with them, and they honestly do both remember it. And it's funny now, you know, one's 17, the other's going to be 15. And they talk about it with their friends, and they're like, my dad, and they tell the story right. They're like, my dad, you know, got us rods. He carries everything down. He sets it up. We're done in 45 minutes, man.
Hey, man, I'm going to do – there's reasons I haven't done these things is the perception would be I wouldn't enjoy it as much. I would enjoy a ball game more. I would enjoy a concert more, the things that I've always done, right?
Yeah.
So having had both of them taken away the last 15 months, we've talked about that, comedy shows, you know, all that taken away, I'm trying to figure out this summer, use it wisely, do some things I've never done before, right? Yeah. I've never been to Rocky Gap. I've never been to Deep Creek Lake. I've never been to Antietam. I've never been to Calvert Cliffs. I've never been to St. Mary's. I've never had Smith Island cake in Smith Island. So I'm going to be doing – I've never been to Chestertown. I mean, there's a lot of things I've never done.
Right.
And this is my summer to maybe give it a shot. Maybe one or two of these things would be something I've never glamped. I've camped, but I've never glamped. So I'm going to try to glamp. So I want to do these things that maybe one or two of them I'll like enough. I think I will like fly fishing. I watch people do it in Montana. I want to learn to do that. I think that would be fun for me.
Nestor, I'm going to tell you something. Fly fishing is amazing. I've done it. I love fishing. Like, I really do love
fishing.
So you
would come out to the Savage River and fly fish with us in August?
I haven't fly fished in 30 years. I went as a kid.
But what if I brought an expert that taught us how to do it?
I would be there in a second.
Okay.
In a second. But, dude, there's so many things. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to have, you know, a father and a bunch of uncles that were that liked doing stuff. So, you know, as a kid, I did a lot of things. And I kept it with them. I passed a lot of it on to my boys. And, you know, hopefully they'll pass it on. But I think what you're doing in August is absolutely brilliant. I mean, and Preakness, you know, Preakness is one of those things that is so Baltimore and so Maryland, really, that, you know, and we got to live it like rock stars. I mean, we're so lucky, man. So when we talk about it, and then, like, to me, though, when you're talking about Ocean City or, you know, Tillman Island or whatever, you know, Calvert Cliffs, these are all things I just think we take for granted and never took the time. Like you're saying,
I think we take the Bay for granted. I've been hearing that my whole life. And then, you know, I saw a Jeopardy question that Maryland has more waterfront
property
than any other state in the country. Like, I think about the tributaries.
I think it's like 120 miles or something. It's astronomical.
It's way more than that.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I just read something.
If you drive up every tributary, how much literal waterfront we have here? It's insane.
That might just be Bay proper. I don't know, but you're right. When you take in every little thing,
So we're you know, and the Bay ecosystem. What I've learned, and I'll let you go on this. What I've learned is the oysters growing the grass that feed the crabs. And O'Malley, you know, came on the show and said that's his – of all the things he did, that's the thing he's most proud of, that the crabs are bigger, the bay's healthier, and all of the pooping we doing and peeing we doing and dredging we doing and what they're doing up in Pennsylvania and washing all that shiz down into the basin – bad news. So I want to make sure that we're letting people know about that. Hey, dude, I love you. Hey, Costas, we'll go get some crabs or crab cakes. Why don't you do a crab cake with me, bro?
I would do 30 of them with you. I'm in, man. All right.
I'm going to reach to you, man. One of the things about this damn thing with this plague thing is like friendships and friends. Like, I used to come see your show. You were 98 Rockin'. I was Nasty Nestorin. We would run into each other.
Yeah.
Now we're both like cooped up and you're like living in my neighborhood, Dundalk. So, I mean.
Speaking of which. Yeah. This live theater here, FPX Theater. Nestor, it's your 30th year. It's time we do it. Why don't we finally roast you?
Oh, man. Come on.
Let's do it.
I don't want to do that, man.
Yes, you do. Yes, you do. You owe it to your fans. You owe it to listen, you're one of, and I'm going to give you a compliment here that only you can appreciate.
I get roasted every day of my life.
Listen
dude.
To me. Dude. Like, when it's done in
me.
Love,
like, it's not.
When it's done in love and fun, trust me. But I want to tell you something. Whether you like it or not, you're going to go down, Nestor, with the likes of Chuck Thompson, Charlie Ekman, these guys that were Johnny Walker, these guys that were Baltimore legends, love them or hate them. Eventually, we all love them.
I got enough love, and I ignore
the
hate.
We're doing it. Even if you don't show up, I'm doing it.
Mickey, listen, I blew off Schuller. I told him I got 5 more minutes with you. He wants you to riff. He doesn't know that I'm talking, but it's okay. And I don't have an answer yet on Chris McCarron, whether he wrote Satan's Squall for Freddie Coachella. Yeah. I'm sure he did. It's your family story. So you got me in the mood. You started the whole thing, right? Because I started doing the Hammerjacks thing. John Allen comes on, then you come on. Then there's this, and then I'm chasing Jill DeVille. And then the next day, you know. So Tommy Conwell, his name came up. My buddy Mike Rosenfeld, who's just been really, really helpful behind the scenes and making my company better. He'll be on the show next week with me. So he says to me, we're like having a meeting, like talking about the web and life and digital stuff. And he's like, hey, man, did you listen to Tommy Conwell? And I'm like, how could you be bringing that up when, like, why? That's such a random thing to say. Did you know I knew? He's like, I don't know. I mean, you know, I thought you might have liked Tommy Conwell. I'm like, and so I'm going to call Tommy and bring him on the show. So I brought him on. And, you know, Tommy's really low key about his career. He's in a family business now. He's got a blue collar like you and me in that way that, like, he just is doing his other thing right now. And he doesn't really want any adulation, or he dealt with all that when he was 28 years old, right? Sure. Trying to be a rock star. So I texted him. He says, sure, I'll come on. He's never come on before. And maybe he came on 20 years ago or whatever, the first Hammer Jacks reunion in Anne Arundel County or whatever.
Yeah.
He might have come off for 5 minutes on the radio. But he comes on and we zoom up. And I do 25 minutes with him, and we talk, and we talk about the old days, the good days, the man theater, music. Boom. We leave. It goes up, and I'm thinking, oh, I hope Mickey sees it. Somebody sees it. The Tommy Conwell fan page gets a hold of it, okay? These are Philadelphia people, all right?
Great people.
They all agree on one thing. Well, two things. They love Tommy Conwell, and that host is a jackass in Baltimore, right? So they were abusive, right? So I'm showing my wife. I'm like, look at what they're saying about me. She's like, man, that's not normal. I'm like, it's every day of my life. Like, it's just what it is. So getting together and getting dressed up on a Saturday and coming to Dundalk, that people who may or may not like me pretend to not like me. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I'd rather do warm up comedy for you and just sit in the corner and drink.
I'm telling you, if we get the right people and we just
who would the right people be? People I fired, pissed off, people that haven't paid their bill. Who are you trying to get?
The two or three friends, true friends that you've accumulated over all this year.
You know more about my Rolodex than I do, because I don't know who the hell they are. I don't know.
Mickey, I'm just one of them. That's fine.
Mickey Rose Nestor.
I've done hours before. I can do it again. But Nestor,
you're not the first one to ask me. The guy that ran Burks for a while asked me.
Yeah.
You know, he called me 10 years ago and wanted to roast me when they were doing Peter Schmuck and all that. And I helped roast Peter Schmuck and...
Yeah.
I feel bad about it. I hope the tape never comes out because I wasn't any good.
Listen, the thing is, Nestor, when you're a personality like you are, you have taken more shots to your ego than any man should ever have.
I have no ego. I'm completely emasculated.
But that's the beauty of it, because the people, every roaster will end with how much they love you and why. Dude, it's all done in fun. And when it's done right, you will absolutely love it. We can raise money for charity.
I didn't love Peter Schmuck and do all that at the end. Maybe that's why it didn't work.
Dude, I love it. Listen, I give you the venue. I think this
I've been writing comedy for 18 years of my marriage. And a lot of it's about my mom. Now that she's dead, I can use it. I love you, Mickey. I love you too, bro.
Anytime, pal.
Oh, all of our wise conversations. The comedy's extra. You know, you got to go to the produce department to get that. We appreciate all of our sponsors around here, including our friends at Cole Roofing and Gordy Energy for putting us up and putting us out. And Blondell Miller, Schuller, and Damn Good Lawyer, all my East Side friends, Pizza John's. We're coming to Pizza John's June 18th with Dutch Rupert's Burger, the Crab Cake Tour. I can announce that. I just got confirmation that Stuart Pittman is joining me at G&M for a Crab Cake on July 8th. We have confirmation from Brandon Scott at Coco's as well in June. So the Crab Cake Tour is starting. At some point, Mickey and I will get together and have a proper crab cake. Maybe I'm a Highland Town at Chaucer in September. What do you think, man?
I love it. But also, I grew up directly across the street from Coco's.
Gardenville.
Lauraville.
Right on.
One block north of Herring Run Park.
Upper Herring Park.
Yeah.
We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking roasting with Mickey Cacella. You want to get me roast? Just go to Twitter. I get roasted every day.